Well, here we go again. Persiflage number 29. It's better than sex, but we can't prove this. This one's from October the 4th, 2001. And it's got, sweet, it looks like 1, 2, 3 essays and a poem. No quotations this week, but a couple of classified advertisements at the end. So let's dive right in and go with the first essay by Hugh Briss. Time to sell out. And there are 6 exclamation marks after it. So it says, you better believe it. In case those of you who have been living on high ideals and very little in the way of funds haven't gotten the message yet, it's time to sell out. Not since Leon Trotsky left Mexico. He faked his death. The axe was rubber. Moved north, dyed his hair, bought a white suit, and opened a chicken franchise. Has there been a better time? All signs point to go. So stop, collect $200 and head for Easy Street, which is not named for Sergeant Rock's old company. If you think about it seriously, which generally I wouldn't recommend, what have you been holding out for anyway? Is your self-esteem so much the higher for eating Mr. Noodle and not compromising your principles? Don't make me laugh. No, seriously, I just ate. Whenever I have to decide something, I make a list of pros and cons on a piece of construction paper using various kinds of pasta to form the letters, and then I feed it to my dog. He never finishes the whole thing, so if there's more pros left smeared around his dog dish when he trots off somewhere to lick himself, then I do whatever it was I was thinking about, and if there's more cons, well, you get the idea. Recently, I used this technique to decide the question of whether I should sell out. Sparky left mostly pros, and that is why, the next time you walk through the bay, you'll see a persiflage line of activewear for toddlers. Hubris. Next up, another piece by Hubris, which is entitled The Vagaries of Attractiveness. This could be interesting, or possibly not. I used to date a girl, this was years ago, who for some unexplained, at least to me, reason reminded me of Hermann Göring. She didn't look at all like him, maybe a bit around the eyes, but quite often when I was around her, I found myself thinking of the former Reichsmarshal. Needless to say, the relationship didn't last long. Unless you're wired in a very different manner from me, no image of this fat Nazi could possibly be construed as erotic, and even in a relationship that does not revolve around sex, this is going to, at least from time to time, present a problem. Human attraction is a very confused business. Often one cannot say with any degree of accuracy what it is that one finds attractive about another person. I have been madly in love with women that others found not only unattractive but downright reprehensible. And once, I was seeing a woman who was startlingly beautiful, extremely intelligent, kind, thoughtful, and for some strange reason wildly attracted to me. I, on the other hand, was never more than lukewarm about the whole thing. I don't think I'm alone here. Others have been subjected to these same dating conundrums. As evidence, I present the following anecdote. Once upon a time, there was an otter named Gomez who had a serious case of the hots for his neighbor. Unfortunately, his neighbor was completely unaware of Gomez's existence. This is because his neighbor was actually a lawn ornament. One of those two-dimensional representations of a woman in bloomers bent over and watering plants. So, who can blame him, really? Come on, you felt it. Now, all kinds of mixed relationships can work. But one kind that seems to be particularly difficult is a relationship between an actual living thing and an inanimate object. Despite what the people in that very odd store told you, this is not a real relationship. And so Gomez was doomed to a life of unhappiness, pining away for someone who would never return his love. Is there a happy ending or even a point to this story? No. Sorry. That was vaguely unsatisfying. Next up, a poem by Sally Kind, entitled, How About That Shakespeare? Shall I compare thee to a summer's day? Or would you rather I didn't? You are certainly long and hot, but you don't affect my allergies, which is nice. But what isn't, and is so much like a summer's day, is your tendency to suddenly rain on my tiny parade. Our final piece before the classified advertisements is something called Dog Talk. There's a brief introduction. A lot of dogs, mostly Weimaraners for some strange reason, have been writing in lately and complaining that they are underrepresented in these pages. Although we might be inclined to impugn the veracity of that statement, we have decided, in the interest of pandering to our quadruped readers, to run the following article by a canine contributor. Here goes. Rilke said that one should embrace that which is difficult. Now, that's advice that I have very little enthusiasm for following. That's the kind of thing that's going to prompt me to hug the Rottweiler that lives two doors down. I would be hard-pressed to name something more difficult than that. This is probably the stupidest, most irritating dog I have ever encountered. Not only is he a moron, but he possesses that awful combination of narcissism and exhibitionism that compels a dog to be perpetually licking himself in public. This is not the type of cleaning that springs from good personal hygiene habits. For many years now, seven of mine, probably one of yours, this particular fellow, whom I'll call Rolf, although that is not his name, I really don't relish incurring his wrath, even though I certainly sincerely doubt that he will be reading this. He's the kind of dog who will only read books that are concerned specifically with his breed, and then he will concentrate almost wholly on the pictures. Rolf has been seeking out my companionship. This is based almost solely on the fact that we are both German. I'm a Schnauzer. And he believes in the superiority of all things German, the way that some dogs believe in the inferiority of all things feline. Now, I am as proud of my heritage as the next dog, but this Yabo's Aryan fixation is more than a tad disturbing, and, quite frankly, his loud and obnoxious comments are reflecting badly on me. Just the other day, a Russian wolfhound of my acquaintance referred to Rolf as that rotty friend of yours. This is getting me a bad rap. I have no desire to be associated with this kind of bigotry, although what kind of bigotry I am willing to be associated with, I couldn't say. But what is a dog to do? As I mentioned earlier, I certainly don't want to get on his bad side. He is much larger than I am. But I also don't want other dogs, especially that cute terrier beagle cross that I sometimes see in the park, to think that my silence means that I in any way condone or agree with his racial views. Should one remain silent in such a case? Is silence a form of complicity? These are questions that have troubled dogs for centuries, and nowhere in all of Goethe is there an answer I can live with. Heine has also provided me with little guidance. A friend suggested that maybe in Tolstoy's later work this might be addressed. But I've never liked the Russians. Gunther's Wyback. Okay, classified advertisements. Classified advertisements. Take out an ad in Persiflage. It will make you popular and quite possibly taller. Prices this month drop to an astonishing low, maximum of 40 words. Inquire at persiflagemag@hotmail.com. Put I love hubris in the subject field. Wanted, belly button lint from the 30s. Must be authenticated or the deal is off. Reply to box 23. For sale, some potato pancakes that I'm really too full to eat. They're in the back of the fridge behind the Miracle Whip. just leave the money on the counter. And that's it for number 29. So next week, persiflage number 30. I would give you a preview, except I have not laid eyes on it, so I have no idea what to expect. Probably will be somewhat different from this week's. Anyway, that's it, and goodbye.